Our partners rarely actually walk in the door and mean to hurt our feelings. We can perceive it that they're hurting our feelings, but is that actually their intention? And so the biggest habit that I think is important for people is questioning, like, this is my perception, but was that actually my partner's intention to come off that way?
Welcome to Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams so that you have the courage to live your best life. I'm Rebecca Mullen, a relationship coach living in Western Colorado, and today my guest is Chantel Landeros, founding partner and psychotherapist at Thrive Marriage and Family Counseling in Grand Junction, Colorado. When I shared a recent lunch with Chantel, she told me that couples experience less conflict when they establish roles for their relationship. That both intrigued me and bothered me, so I wanted to know more. Today's conversation is about roles in your relationship. You'll hear why roles in your relationship help to uncover hidden expectations and how that helps prevent conflict. You'll get some fabulous conversation prompts to help you get curious about the hidden assumptions lurking in your relationship. And we'll give you a 90-second habit that will change the way you experience conflict and increase the trust you feel for your partner. I'm going to ask you about masculine and feminine energy, because when we were having lunch, this is what was making me lean in so much, because you were talking, you said this thing that felt controversial if I look at it on the surface, but when I listened to you, it actually really landed with me. And you said, you know, when we have roles in a relationship and stick to our roles, oftentimes conflict reduces.
Right.
So I want to hear you talk first about masculine and feminine energies with the idea that I want to be kind of moving us toward roles.
Okay. Yeah. So when I talk about this, I kind of like to go, I don't know, in many different directions. But the first place that makes me think of is in relationships. In our lives, we carry a certain amount of, like individually, we carry a certain amount of masculine and feminine energy. And when we think about masculine and feminine energy, masculine energy is going to be like the strong protector, provider, like intense perseverance, like these very, I don't mean hard, but like just strength, right? Like a pillar of strength, right?
Right. And just for my listeners, I'm going to hearken back to episode 25 with Shannon Markland when she talked about yin and yang energy. Mm. So we'll hearken back to that, because that yang energy is that sort of bright sunlight, shows up strong and strident, and then that yin energy, which is the nighttime, the reflective mode, the receptive, nurturing, healing.
Yeah.
Does that resonate for you as masculine and feminine energies?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that softer side is much more like when I think about feminine energy, that's what we naturally, when we're experiencing this feminine energy, we're softer, we're more approachable, we're in this like nurturing, connected, more emotional place. And when we look back at our history, right, whether you agree with it or not, right, like this is where the controversial part comes in, is that like in the 1950s and before, you don't have to agree with traditional marriage to know this, but like the man had this like masculine role of being the provider, right? And so I'm kind of like mixing these ideas of roles and masculine and feminine energy, but he had this role of just being the provider, being the strength, being the strong and consistent, right? He got up for work every day, he read the paper, like looking back on all the movies that we watch now, right? But he like read the paper and she served him breakfast, and then he went off and he did his job, and then he came back and he was met with this soft energy of like this nurturer, right?
Because, welcome home.
Yeah. right? Isn't that what we all? welcome home, honey. Here's your hot toddy.
And sit in your easy chair while I take care of everything.
Right, right.
While I feed you and nourish you.
Yeah, and so like we don't have to agree with that to know that like we can see that in how the dynamic worked, right? Because the wife's role was to take care of the kids, was to take care of the home, and she had the space and energy to be able to do that without pressure of the outside world to be able to do that. And so it allowed for her feminine energy to flow. As long as the husband was being the provider, then she could do all of those things, right? Now, fast forward, right? Mm-hmm. We're in 2024 and life doesn't look like that. And thank God, right?
Right.
Because we wouldn't be where we are. Yes. I mean,
we're not pining for the good old days.
No, that's not my stance at all either. But, and I'm thankful for the movement that has been created for women in that we are able to do what we are able to do because, I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. So
you wouldn't be owning a thriving practice.
No, certainly not. I wouldn't have my master's degree. I wouldn't have any of that. So I think that as we fast forward, what's really happened in a lot of ways is women got the green light to be whatever they wanted to be, right? Mm-hmm. Which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is we ended up being everything. And so when we like,
I can bring home the bacon,
right?
Fry it up in a pan.
Yep. And so we're the do it all. We have this like do it all mentality in this hustle culture that women are in right now. It's like you're going to work full time. You're going to build success. You're going to take care of your kids. You're going to take care of your beautiful home, and you're going to have a satisfied husband
and in a happy whatever. Sex life,
right?
Because you're so beautiful.
Yeah. Right. Because you still go to the
sexy.
Gym.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You still go to the gym every day and drink all the water and eat right and do all the things, right? Our list is endless of like what it means to be an everything woman, right? But what's happened is in that hustle, we have really taken a lot of the energy away from men of like, well, if we can do all, then what are they doing, right? And when we take all of that energy, when we're like, I'm going to hold this masculine energy, then the man is left with the feminine energy, right? And when a man is left with a feminine energy, it's very uncomfortable for them. They don't know exactly like what to do with it. They want to be a man. They want to be a provider. But then they also want to respect the fact that we're hustling women and they're trying to provide us space to be able to do that. And so it's gotten so complicated in terms of the roles, in terms of the energy. And so when I'm working with couples, this is a lot of what we're dealing with, right? Is like this, how do we put all of these things together and respect both sides?
And I'm going to push against the women and men embracing the masculine, feminine energies, but also say that there are some men now that really super want to embrace all those feminine roles of primary caregiver for children, support character at home, keeping the home fires burning. And I've seen relationships thrive.
Absolutely.
When the masculine energy is actually living inside a woman's body.
Sure.
Or, and obviously we are talking about same-sex couples too. So being able to tease apart masculine and feminine energy, provider energy and nurturing energy from male and female.
Right.
What I want to do then is ask you to talk a little bit more about what happens when one person's hogging the energy, because you sort of talked about how with women, we got the green light, we got all these choices, and then we took it all on as a culture.
Yeah.
And then women just became really darn tired and resentful. And men went, okay, now where do I fit?
Right.
Because I'm no longer really as needed in that provider role.
Right.
Partly what we're looking at is this cultural crescendo and how roles are changing and trying to take history into account
right.
for why why are we looking at roles and how can we look at roles differently?
I think the big thing about that is like not necessarily like who's carrying the energy, but has the negotiation happened?
There you go. Yeah. I love that.
I think that men can be at home dad and at home caregiver, whatever that looks like, and it can work wonderful as long as it's been negotiated and agreed upon within the marriage, and vice versa, right? Like we have women all the time that come in that were like expected to be the stay-at-home mom, and they don't want it, right?
Right.
They don't want to do that, right? And so I think that as long as the conversations are happening of like, where at this phase in our life, it changes over time, right?
At this, when you're phase, talking about at this phase in our life, narrow that down.
What like at this phase in our marriage, like just the negotiation that's happening at any phase of a marriage, the negotiation has to take place. Now, when you're first newlyweds, you don't care as much about what the roles are because you don't have all the stress, right? Bring on the first kid, and a negotiation needs to happen of who's doing what. And a lot of times what's happening is the negotiation isn't verbally happening. It's assumed, and chaos happens either inside or outside in the home.
So two people are participating in that assumption, right? Yeah. Like it could be that one partner is saying, oh, I guess I just thought you would handle that because, right. I mean, the kid did come out of your body and you're breastfeeding. Right. So, I mean, seems like you're built to be the caregiver.
Right.
And or the assumption is I assumed that because I was carrying this baby that then I could go back to work and we would figure that out.
Right.
So talk about how to have that kind of negotiation. What does that negotiation sound like?
I think that the first thing that you need to before starting that negotiation is understanding like where you get that vision from. Like where does your assumption come from that you think that like this is how it's going to go, right? So a lot of people get that from like how they were raised, how they watched their parents do things. And they either like are going to do it just like their parents did or assume that it's supposed to be just like their parents did, or they're going to be like, they did that completely wrong and I want to do it completely opposite. And so everybody has this vision in their head of what these roles are supposed to look like, and they're all different. Yeah. Like, so we have to have the conversation with each other of like, who does get up with the baby in the middle of the night? Like, you're going to work. Okay, I'm going to get up with the baby in the middle of the night and feed while you're at work. But when I start work, how do we negotiate that? Right? Why isn't my job to just be the one that's up with the baby all night long? And in 12 weeks, I got to go back to work. Mm-hmm. Right?
Or even, you get to go to work all day.
Yeah.
I'm here with this baby. Mm-hmm. I need some sleep.
Right.
So since I'm on day shift, you got to take some of this night shift. Right. You know, being able to be talk about how are we going to sleep?
Right.
Each of us is going to get less sleep
right.
than we did
yeah.
before this baby came.
Right.
What's that going to look like?
Yeah. So I think when you ask like, how do we have this conversation? I think if we approach it with curiosity.
I love the word curiosity.
Yeah, it's my favorite. So anything that happens, like when you're going through a life transition, like having a baby or like empty nesting, right? Those are, or retiring. These are all really big things that happen to everybody. Well, everybody that has kids.
And that gets to live long enough.
And that gets to live long enough, yeah. So we have to be curious about where the other person is at. And some of that just starts with checking in with the person. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you handling this? What are your thoughts about this? Mm-hmm. Tell me where you're at about what's going on when it comes to Alan leaving the house. I mean, that's what we're dealing with right now. Every spring, this is what we deal with, is like everybody's gearing up ready for their kids to leave for college in the next 6 months.
Oh, got it.
And so it's very much
so. So those 18-year-olds that just finished high school, everybody has some assumptions about what that's going to look like.
Right.
And can you spell out some of the assumed things?
Sure. I think one big one that comes up is like, how are you going to spend your free time? Like one person a lot of times has...
This is as a couple's coming into that empty nest. Yeah. They're launching their last kid.
Yep. Or even their first kid.
Okay.
Right? Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, you're going to have more space and time, whether okay. it's your first kid going or your last kid going. But it's very much so, like, I see a lot of times one person is like, we're going to live our best life. Like, we're going to go out all the time. We're going to plan all these vacations. And the other one's like, oh my God, I can't believe we made it. I just want to sit on the couch and do nothing and not have anyone talk to me.
We're going to live our best life. We're going to be on the couch.
And those two people marry each other a long time ago. And then they're not curious. They just assume that, like, starting next year, they're going to, like, plan all these vacations. So then the other person who wants to sit on the couch is like, why are you pressuring me to go out all of a sudden?
Exactly.
Why are you not happy here? Like, what's going on? All of a sudden, friction starts, right?
And let's just pause for a second, because there's so much that happens in the microsecond you just articulated. Yep. That moment when, why are you pressuring me? Mm-hmm. The traveling person thought, I thought I was inviting you.
Yeah.
I thought I was welcoming you into my dream.
Absolutely.
And the couch person is saying, that feels like pressure to me because yeah. that is not my dream.
Mm-hmm. Not my dream and not in my values. And like, you didn't even ask me. Mm. Right? And there's the curious part. Like, you didn't even ask. You just assumed where we were going.
Part of defining roles that I'm hearing you is we want to be invited mm-hmm. into the role that we might take on.
Right. Mm. Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes, like, so being curious is like the first step of it, right? Like, we want to be in a place where we can be curious with the other person of what they want their experience to be like. And we want the other person to be curious about what we want too, right? It has to go both ways. But then the other thing that we have to, like, step back and look at is, like, what are your values, mm-hmm. right? So We most of the time when we get married, we don't know what our values are because we're so young and we don't know what, sometimes we do. I don't know.
It's hard to articulate what our values are.
Right.
I would say that a big part of the work I do privately with people is just helping them notice what mm-hmm. they do value by looking at how they live their life.
Right.
And then sometimes as I point that out, like, oh, you really value time to process mm-hmm. and time to sit still. And they go, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. And I go, but that's how you're spending your time. And mm-hmm. that's what you're resenting that you're not getting.
Right.
And then we question.
Right.
Maybe you value it more than you realize.
Right. Yeah. And then I think, well, we don't know what they are within ourselves. We don't know how to communicate them with our partner either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like, we have a lot of restrictions while we're parenting about, like, how we spend our time or traveling, adventure, those kinds of things. And so when we have a life transition, if we're not going back to our values and making sure that we're, like, looking at them, leaning into them, communicating about them, we're just going to willy-nilly it, and it's going to cause conflict.
Okay, so I have a new definition of when you talk about it really helps to have roles mm-hmm. in a relationship. We are so not talking about 1950s roles.
No.
What we're talking about is, okay, there's the role of nighttime parent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's negotiate
yeah.
what that looks like. What does nighttime parenting look like? There's the role of earning money.
Mm-hmm.
Let's negotiate.
Yep.
What does that look like? There's the role of adventurer.
Right.
What does that look like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't have the luxury of assumed roles anymore. I think that that's the basis
got
of it all.
Got it.
Right?
Because in the 50s, there wasn't those choices. And so we just had to stay in our lane,
right?
our prescribed lane.
You knew what you were supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, there was arranged marriages. You knew when you this is what you were expected to do, right? And now we have so much freedom, which is beautiful. And we also don't talk enough about it to be able to make it successful a lot of times.
Ah, I love that. That the choices have liberated us, except in order to feel the liberation, mm-hmm. we need to be super clear mm-hmm. about which choices we're taking on, because we can't embrace every single one of those choices
right.
or we just enter that hustle culture,
sure.
resentment builds, conflict ensues.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about roles that box us in and roles that liberate us? And I'm guessing that part of that has to do with not bringing the curiosity to the discussion mm-hmm. about roles and just saying, well, you agreed to be the stay-at-home parent. And then again, we go back to, I assumed, and when I said, you agreed to be the stay-at-home parent, I had this whole list of things that included, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that list, mm-hmm. rather than talking down that list, mm-hmm. stay-at-home parent might mean doing some food preparation,
sure.
but it might not be.
Right.
Let's talk about food preparation.
Right.
Let's talk about cleaning the house. Let's talk about maintaining vehicles or dealing with insurance policies right. or medical appointments or...
Yeah, I think when you ask that question, the first thing that really came up for me is like any role that is not able to be negotiated on. So any role that we find ourselves in that is not, we're not able to like renegotiate as
can
we're going.
Can you give me an example? Because yes. I can tell you're imagining something.
So I think a big one that comes up for me is stay-at-home mom when the kids are babies, right? And a lot of times, I mean, pretty typically what we see is like a couple of kids within 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's pretty typical. And then once the youngest is going into kindergarten, mm-hmm. if the husband's assuming or the wife is assuming that the stay-at-home parent is going to continue to be the stay-at-home parent and do all of the running around and do the school drop-off and do the soccer practice and do mm-hmm. the blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it's not being talked about, mm-hmm. then that boxes that person into the role yeah. and they can't, there's no liberation in that. Like you can't like go and live out another dream. You're either this or you're that.
You've just spent 8 years from the birth of your first child until your third child mm-hmm. enters all day kindergarten.
Yeah.
That was what you did, was yeah. you took care of kids. And now you're ready to get back on your career track and get things going, but you can't shake off this stay-at-home parent
right.
role. Now, I want to ask you about that because I know when I talk to people who've been the provider, the not, you know, the person bringing income in mm-hmm. and not being the stay-at-home parent, they feel lost because they didn't get all that practice mm-hmm. all those years. So they are like, I don't know what's expected of me.
Right. Again, that's like the negotiation and curiosity of it, right? A lot of times the provider person is resistant to the other person going to get a job because it means change for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're like, no, we're not doing that. Like, I am not going to renegotiate my life so that you can go. And a lot of times, I mean, after you haven't worked for 8 years, you're in a startup position again, right? Like, is it fine?
We'll always hear that you're going to earn enough to pay for our childcare.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, how is that worth it?
Right.
And then someone feels imprisoned
right.
in the role.
Right. And if we went back to our values, right? If independence is a value of the person that's staying at home, we're infringing on their values by not allowing them to make that, you know, decision for themselves or go through that process.
If you're enjoying today's podcast episode, I invite you to subscribe to my newsletter so you never miss a single episode. If you're not signed up currently, just click the link in the episode notes, sign up, and you'll never miss another episode. Plus, this is where I offer you special deals and information that I only send to people who are on my newsletter. And it's a great way that you can communicate with me. Because all you have to do is hit the reply button and tell me what you're thinking. Because you know I love being included in your life. We've kind of already talked about expectations and how we make assumptions. Mm-hmm. And that gets in the way of intimacy.
Right.
Now what I want you to talk about a little bit is when we have these conversations.
Yeah.
And when we feel like we really did ask. Like when our partner said, how can I support you? Mm-hmm. And then I gave my answer and I feel like, okay, I clearly asked for what I wanted. And then my partner isn't giving it to me. Mm-hmm. Talk about talk about that for a minute.
Does your partner have the capability to meet that need? Yeah. I think that that's a big check-in to have, because you can ask for something and your partner can really want to give it to you.
They isn't capable.
They don't have the tools.
So what do you do then?
Go to couples therapy. Okay.
Yeah. Seriously. I mean, that really is where you can get some help.
Yeah. Because the blessing of something like couples therapy, whether it's traditional one-on-one couples therapy or like couples intensives where you like really dig in and learn about each other in a concentrated environment, you have to understand that most people aren't not meeting your needs because they don't want to. It's because they just don't know how. Because something within their childhood, their 7-year-old self, their 14-year-old self, didn't get that need met, and they don't know how to meet it for themselves now. It means that they don't know how to meet it for you.
Bottom line, one of the things that I hear you saying is when we may ask for something we want, our partner may want mm-hmm. to give it to us. And maybe just trust that when your partner says, I want to give that to yeah. you, believe them.
Right.
And then the next layer of curiosity is, what's stopping you? I believe you that you want to give it to me.
Yeah.
What's in the way?
Yeah. So sometimes with my couples, I have them do like a rating scale. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want to meet this need for your partner? And that can kind of like, so 1 being, I really don't care to meet this need, and 10 being, I'll do anything that I can to meet this need, is so having them put that on a rating scale. And then the follow-up question I have is, what tools do you need to be able to do that?
I love that. So let's make it super practical. And let's stay with the example of, I want to support you mm-hmm. so that you're no longer bearing that. And let's even choose inside of stay-at-home parent. Let's choose nighttime parenting.
Yeah, fair.
Because that one is so – people get so exhausted when yeah. they're not sleeping. Okay, so I really want to support you as the nighttime parent. What tools do I need to do that? Help me with this one.
Yeah. So a lot of times it's they don't know what to do.
Okay.
Right? Another one, like if we're going to go into the nighttime parenting one, I think a big piece that comes into that is like they want to do it, but then they have felt like you've come behind them and told them a different way to do it. And so they feel like they're not capable. So they're not feeling confident in doing it. Right.
So with that, and this I've seen this mm-hmm. where someone will say, well, I just want you to get up with the baby.
Right.
And I want you to get the baby back to sleep.
Right.
And so the partner takes the job on,
right.
gets up with the baby. They decide this baby just needs to cry it out or mm-hmm. whatever. And the parent who had the initial responsibility is like, you're not doing it the right way.
Right. So the question would be, I need help. I need you to take over some of the nighttime parenting stuff. Okay. The other person, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you really want to help me do the nighttime parenting stuff? The other person says, I'm at a 10.
Okay. I really want to help.
Yeah, I really want to help. The next question is, how much do you trust me mm-hmm. to be able to do it, even if it's not your way?
Mm. And then the question in the middle that I'm hearing is, can we agree on what is the way?
Right.
We need to agree.
Right. What are the important pieces for you? What is the non-negotiable of this process that I need to respect? And then can I have autonomy around that?
Okay. So we agree that the baby's not going to cry for more than 3 minutes or whatever. We will both agree on that one.
Right.
But
when I get up, I'm going to change the baby's diaper just like you want me to. And I'm going to make sure I use baby powder because I don't know how long they're going to sleep. Right. Yeah. These are things yeah. that are super, super important, right?
And if you don't articulate the specifics, how does someone know?
They will fail every time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then the next morning it's, oh, now the baby has this horrible diaper rash because you failed to do the powder. See, I told you I can't trust you.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that really just getting into the nitty gritty of the specifics of things is what's really important. So I think if we have a need, is the journey the thing that means the most, or is it the end result?
Say more. What? Let's.
Is it how you do it or that you get it done? Right.
Okay. So is it most important that you do the baby powder and mm-hmm. the changing of the diaper and you give them a bottle and you rock them to sleep?
Right.
And you don't leave the room until the baby's asleep. Right. Or is it, I don't care how you do it.
Right.
I care that I don't get woken up.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. Because those are two different conversations.
How, and maybe just setting up a little bit of a decision tree mm-hmm. for yourselves. If yeah. you're having this conversation, you don't need couples therapy, but you do want to have conversations like this. Mm-hmm. Part of it is getting really clear on what are the decision points. Right. Is it a journey or what was your other word there?
Is it how it's done or that it gets done?
That it gets done.
Or how it
gets done.
Correct.
Okay, that's really helpful. Now, talk to us about when we've been able to powerfully negotiate. Mm-hmm. We used curiosity. We were kind to each other. We talked about all the different variables. Now we know our role as a nighttime parent. Mm-hmm. And we've had some successful nights. Mm-hmm. Talk about how intimacy in a relationship changes because you know the roles you're playing.
Yeah. I think that it allows for the stress to come down just in the relationship in general and then in our bodies, right? So when we're continually pushed with stress over and over again, it fires up our polyvagal system and causes like fight or flight response. Am I going to fight you or am I going to leave this situation because I can't fight you right now, right? And a lot of times we're so tired of saying the same thing over and over again that we just walk away, right? Hence resentment. So what we really want to do is acknowledge that the good has happened. Right? And that we've done good things and that feels good. And when we do that, we release different chemicals in our brain. Mm-hmm. We act differently. We open up to one another. Our body language opens up. So many things happen, right? When our needs aren't being met, we close off, we come backwards, we turn away from each other, we shut off in so many ways. And so what we'll see happen over time is those like naturally opening up and turning toward. And that's where the intimacy comes from. And when two partners are turned toward each other, they can reach their hand out to each other and be like, I really need this from you. And they know they can get it. And that's where intimacy comes from.
Trust.
Yeah.
So let's use the same example of the nighttime parenting. So the next morning, having coffee in the kitchen, bouncing a baby on your hip mm-hmm. as you do it, asking the question, okay, how did I do mm-hmm. taking over the nighttime parenting? What did I get right? And what do you need more help
right.
with?
And I think that that's a big piece is being vulnerable enough to ask for feedback. Otherwise, you will be met with criticism. So if you're taking over the role of nighttime parent and you're not willing to turn back to your partner and say, how did I do?
Great.
Is there anything I could have done better?
Great.
If you're not the person asking that question, the other person is going to turn toward you and be like, you forgot the baby powder.
and then what happens is, well, I can't get it right. No
I
matter
can't
do what
anything
I do,
right.
I can't get it right. So yep. I'm going to stop trying.
Yep. And then shut down. It's criticism. It's rejection. They yep. tried. They couldn't meet your need.
Yeah.
Are they going to do it again?
Yeah.
No.
No. Because I did 8 things right,
right.
and you talked about the one yep. thing I did wrong.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I always am aware that I don't know which one of the people is listening.
Yeah.
So let's take care of both.
Sure.
So let's take care of the person who's the stay-at-home parent.
Okay.
And they are sick of nighttime parenting. Mm-hmm. And they are so tired. And they just said, you know, do it this way. And I don't even care how you get it done. Just make sure I can sleep through the night.
Yeah.
And then next morning, they name the 3 things their partner got wrong.
But the person in that situation wouldn't care about what they did wrong. They just would have cared that they got to go to sleep, right? So they're not going to be the person that's like, you missed the baby powder, you let them cry for a minute extra. They're like, thank God for letting me sleep, right? So that's why we have to have that, like, is it the process,
the journey, or
right?
The, Yeah.
Is it that the process is done right, or is that you just did what you just did the thing?
And so the question either person can ask really the next morning. So the next morning, if you were the step-in nighttime parent and you begin to get criticism, you could say, hey, time out. I thought my job was to take care of this so you could sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I did that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's stop. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you need something different.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me everything you need. Mm-hmm. I'm going to interrupt you from criticizing me because I did the best I could.
Right. With the information that they had.
Yeah.
Right. Because
curiosity again.
At that point, you didn't have enough information. The person, and part of that could be exhaustion, right?
Yes, like of course.
They don't care. Like they assume that you're going to do it the way that you, they do it. Right. And then you wake up and you're like, oh, I really did try, but like clearly there's more important pieces to this. How can I, like, what are the really important pieces that I can show that I value that are important to you, mm-hmm. so that you can really let this go?
Okay, so let's imagine it goes really well.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can ask for more support because you got your needs met,
mm-hmm.
and you've learned this meta skill,
mm-hmm.
of it took us 3 nights to dial this in because there were expectations we didn't realize we had. And so you learn to have conversations. Expectations kind of show up. Part of understanding, being kind to yourselves, is that you have expectations even if you don't realize it.
Right.
So when you say, I don't even care how it happens, maybe give yourself the grace to realize, I probably care. I just don't know how to articulate it yet. Give yourself that grace. So then habits form.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the habit that I'm seeing at a meta level is give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
Check in with each other. How did I do? Did I give you the support you asked for?
Mm-hmm.
If you needed the support, to say something that worked well,
mm-hmm.
so that your partner knows, yes, you gave me something and I need more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay that I need more.
Right.
Because we're learning together.
Right.
It's not that you failed.
Right.
But I do need more.
And so much of that is how you're saying what you're saying,
yeah.
not what you're saying. Right.
So give us the good, the facilitative way to say things and the non-facilitative way.
Man, I could go on and on about that.
You get a front row seat to the non-facilitative.
I think that the important piece about that, right, is that like all of these things that I'm talking about are like at this process level. I don't care about the content. We could stick in a bazillion different topics to
examples.
What we're talking
yep.
about right
mm-hmm.
now that don't have anything to do with nighttime parenting. But if you can figure out the process in which you have communication, that is the key, right? And so like harsh startup versus soft startup is like, I mean.
Tell us.
Oh, yeah.
Harsh.
I mean, well, that's like the non-facilitated versus facilitated answer, right? Is, I mean, walking in the room and be like, why the hell did you not do what I asked you to do?
Harsh.
That's harsh.
Startup.
Right? And then a soft startup would be like, hey, how was your day? Blah, blah, blah. Hey, I noticed that this didn't get done. I'm curious if there was something that happened.
Oh, I love that. Because I can feel the assumption is, I believed you when you said you wanted to do this, that it was a 10 on the want scale.
Right.
And I noticed it didn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious what got in the way.
Right.
Oh, I love that. Chantel, this is called Habits for Your Happily Ever After. Do you have a habit that when couples practice, it facilitates this kind of role creation or role facilitation or expectations?
I think that the biggest thing that I could give to people about a habit to have in their lives is to assume positive intent.
Mm.
Our partners rarely actually walk in the door and mean to hurt our feelings.
Mm.
We can perceive it that they're hurting our feelings, but is that actually their intention? And so the biggest habit that I think is important for people is questioning, like, this is my perception, but was that actually my partner's intention to come off that way? Because it changes everything. Because when we really look at the person that we love, do we actually think that they are meaning to make us feel the way that they're making us feel? I know people don't like that saying, but that's really how it is. Yeah. I know people can't make us feel anyway, but
but it sure feels that way.
It feels that way. But I don't think that our partners are intentionally, most partners are not intentionally trying to hurt us. Mm-hmm. But we perceive that a lot. Why? Right? That's a you thing. That's not a them thing.
Right. If I have difficulty perceiving positive intent, what can I ask myself to slow myself down, to notice the triggers when I leap to the conclusion that it's not, that my partner is trying to hurt me, that they did it on purpose?
So I think that that's like the balance of emotion and logic in our lives, right? So our brains think in these two ways. So we have our emotional side of our brain and we have our logical side of our brain. And when they communicate with each other and when we're letting the communication happen, we create what we call the wise mind. Mm-hmm. And that wise mind is just this place where we make all like our sound decisions from, because yeah. we're in respect of both sides of our brains. When our partner walks in the door and we're having this big emotional reaction and we blood rushes through us and we're red and we're pissed off, that's your emotional brain, right?
Solo. No logic on
board. No logic. That's how fights happen too. I could get into a whole conflict discussion, but when that rush is coming, we're in our emotional brain. So my biggest recommendation is to give it time.
Okay.
Because and trying to access the logic. Right? Our brain is doing this all the time for us, right? In this conversation, it's happened. In on the way here, it happened, right? Where our brain is just like putting these things together over and over again. And sometimes we can get so emotional that we can get stuck in that box of emotion that we don't allow ourselves to look at the logic in the situation. And so then it keeps us in the emotion, right? So if we can challenge ourselves to look at the other side and try and see the other side, then we can come to our wise mind. I like the 90-second rule.
Tell us the 90-second rule.
90 seconds is a long time.
It is a long time.
But if you take 90 seconds and wait to respond, somebody says something. If I sat here and you said something to me that really grinded my gears right now, and I stopped and I said, I need 90 seconds before I respond to that, what happens? So much happens.
Time.
We both connect to ourselves. We connect to our bodies. We're like, oh God, what did I do? Like, I need to like be in empathy or maybe sympathy for what just happened. Like, after the 90 seconds, after the other person called the 90 seconds and the partner that said the thing is like, I realized when I said that, like before you even go, like it came off totally wrong. Mm. I did not mean to say it that way. I can see why that might have gotten you emotional.
Mm.
Can I re-explain? Can you give me another try?
Mm.
Right?
Oh my gosh, that is such gorgeous language. Because if one partner has said, I need 90 seconds, that's like a flag saying mm-hmm. you hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be that vulnerable and you don't have to charge up. You just, wait a second, this might be about me. Mm-hmm. I just need 90 seconds.
Yep.
And it's a signal to the other person, oh my gosh.
Right.
I think I hurt your feelings and I didn't mean to because I have positive intent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it gives the person that called the 90 seconds a minute to step back and be like, this is about me and not about you.
Right.
I had a crappy day. It's not about how you just said that to me. Yep. Like, I had some things going on.
There's a segment on this podcast called Date Night Discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a couple of questions that we could ask for, say, when it's time, someone has been the stay-at-home parent, and now it's time to make some changes, or even while, you know, okay, they were home for 12 weeks, now we got to renegotiate. Can you mm-hmm. give us a couple questions to help inspire that curious conversation?
Yeah, I think for the first one that you brought up, I mean, just like being a stay-at-home parent for a long time is like, if you could do anything with your time when the kids go back to school, what would you be doing? Mm-hmm. Because it might not be financially based. It might be voluntarily based. It might be educationally based. We don't know what their dream is, right? Mm. And they've had 8 years to think about doing something else besides just running around with kids all the time, you know? Mm. So if we haven't checked in about it in a long time, you could find a lot of information of, like, what are they dreaming?
Mm. And sometimes when you've been the stay-at-home parent, you haven't – your dreams have died a little mm-hmm. bit.
Absolutely.
What questions can wake up a dream?
I think just asking that question, you know, like if you could do anything, what would you be doing? And if you could do anything, how could I support you in that mm-hmm. is really huge.
Okay. So I am thinking about two people who in my practice who don't know how to ask for support. Mm-hmm. And they actually don't know how to imagine support. Can mm-hmm. you help them imagine what support they might need so that they could do something to let go of enough of that stay-at-home parent responsibility that they can begin to find their own independence again?
I think a lot of that comes from the individual personality, right? Like, there are some people who just need the space and the freedom, right? Like, that's what the support looks like. For their partner to just look at them and say, I'm going to support whatever you want to do, and I will be there for it, and we will figure it out as we go. Mm. And sometimes just saying that, right? Their partner just, like, giving, again, like, that green light of, like, be who you want to be, and, yeah. and we'll figure it out as we get there is a really beautiful thing.
And I'm going to pause for 1 second because they can't see your body posture, but mm-hmm. there's everything in your body posture. As you said, hey, like you leaned back, mm-hmm. your arms opened, be who you want to be. How can I support you? Mm-hmm. Be who you want to be. There's a difference between saying it with that body posture mm-hmm. and, oh, so what do you want to be?
Yeah.
Like, how is this going to – I mean, there's yeah. this bracing posture of, how is this going to change my life if I let you have permission?
Right.
So the first step is to really open up mm-hmm. and realize this person has taken one for the team. Mm-hmm. How can we offer some
– Yeah. I think the other thing that I would look at – and this is like my therapist yes, brain, right?
That's who we want to hear from.
Because, I mean, again, there's pathology to everything is, has this person ever actually felt support in their life? Yeah, like what did that support look like? Because a lot of us, we come from not very supportive parents. We find the one person quickly that's going to support us, and then we fall into that. Yeah. And then that support is actually kind of like,
a cage too.
Well, like the bottom of the barrel of expectation because we don't know what actually looks like. And mm-hmm. love or hate our society, we have access to a lot more information than we ever have. And so you get to hear a lot more about like what support can look like or what life can look like. You can create dreams. I mean, Instagram, Facebook, it's full of it. You just scroll and see what wonderful things people are doing. And then all of a sudden you want that, but you don't know how to ask for it, right? And so I think a big piece of that is like, have you ever felt supported? And what was happening when you felt supported? And that doesn't have to just be like from a parent. It could be from a coach. It could be from a mentor, a teacher. Yeah. Anybody that.
A friend.
Mm-hmm. And really digging into that. Like, well, what was that person doing? How did that person, like, how did you feel when you were around that person? Mm. Did that person have similar values of view of like patience and time and connection, right? Mm. I don't know. Like, it really just depends on the person sitting in front of you, how you really answer or ask that question to yourself.
One person's support is going to look like you sat next to me and listened to me as I talked and I cried and I changed my mind 3 times and you didn't tell me that I was crazy. You mm-hmm. just kept following me.
Yep.
And another person's support is you left me alone and you made dinner and you cleaned up, and I just got to have time to myself to ponder.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two really different kinds of support.
And then the one, like, after that is, like, you just gave me the green light, and you just, like, let me set the world on fire. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing, too, right? And But those things don't happen without that like connection and intimacy between the two people. And that happens through conversation and communication and curiosity. That happens over and over and over and over and over again in our relationships. Like, these aren't one or two conversations that we have. These are all the time conversations that we have to have.
So I'm hearing the question that wants to just enter everybody's vocabulary. What can I do to support you today? Mm-hmm. What can I do to support you this week? What can mm-hmm. I do to support you this month, this year, for the next 5 years? Yep. What does support look like for you?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And that changes.
And it changes. And that's why we have to keep revisiting the conversation. My biggest takeaway from my conversation with Chantel is her invitation to assume positive intent. This is so much easier to say than to practice, but it is game-changing. When you assume your partner wants to help you and wants to make you happy, it's so much easier to invite curiosity into the conflicts you have. Hey, I imagine myself saying to my husband, David, when you planned that trip without including me in the discussion, what was happening for you? This approach allows me to let him answer honestly. Maybe he would say, oh, wow, wife, I guess I was only thinking of what I wanted and just assumed you'd be happy to come with me. That starting point creates a very different tone for our conversation than if I'd assumed he was leaving me out on purpose. If I assume he's leaving me out on purpose, I accuse him. He gets defensive, and we're suddenly embroiled in a fight about a trip that could be a vacation. And that approach leads me to be pleasantly surprised when I get to hear him answer, oh, I knew it was something I'd really enjoy, and I wanted to invite you to join me, or invite you to enjoy the time alone, at home, without me. See, when you assume positive intent, it allows you to be genuinely curious rather than feigning curiosity because I think I'm supposed to be curious. I also really appreciated Chantel's combination of the wise mind, how our logic brain and our emotional brain combine to give us access to our inner wisdom. And now I wonder about you. Do you find you get stuck more often in one side or the other of that equation? Are you more likely to be in logic mode or emotion mode? And how does that impact your relationship? How will your relationship shift as a result of today's episode? You know I love being included in your life, so please text me and tell me your story. I'm at 970-210-4480. That's it for today. I'm Rebecca Mullen, and this has been Habits for Your Happily Ever After, where we get clear about your marriage communication. Because when your relationships are strong, you're better able to concentrate at work, reduce conflict at home, and receive support for your dreams so you can have the courage to live your best life. If you enjoyed this podcast, I'd be grateful if you'd send a link to your friend. Habits for Your Happily Ever After is produced by Grace Smith. All our music and sound comes from Walk West Productions. I'm Rebecca Mullen. Thanks for including me in your relationship today.